This is Back to Back.
Yo, what's up, Back to Backers? This is Willie Joy. Welcome to the show. This is Back to Back. This is my podcast. I'm back home, back in the studio, back in the saddle, feeling way more collected than the last time you heard from me when I was losing my mind running around Vegas. I've been having a great week. I've been productive. Some awesome things have just been falling into place. Just one of those weeks where you feel like, yeah, it's going to be all right. Maybe this is all going to work out. How are you doing? I hope you're feeling good. I hope you're feeling strong, taking care of yourself. I hope you're excited for the rest of summer. Hope you're doing something fun. And we're about to have some fun right now because my guest on the show this week is Quix. I love this guy. Definitely top 10 New Zealanders and probably top 10 producers too. He's really just been on a tear since he came onto the scene a couple years ago. And there's a lot to talk about. He just released his collaboration with Alice in Wonderland called Time. You gotta go grab that. Such a dope tune. Before that, he put out a song with Adventure Club. He just dropped a remix of the classic Bloody Beetroots and Steve Aoki, Warp 1.9. And this is a theme with Quix. I mean, he's so prolific. There's always something new dropping, and it's always pushing the envelope. I'm going to tell you more about that conversation in just a minute. But first, Back to Back today is brought to you by Serato. And yeah, we all know Serato, one of the top companies in the industry making hardware and software for DJs, and now they're making tools for producers as well. I'm talking about the brand new Serato Studio. This is a powerful new tool for all you producers out there. Even if you're just getting into making music, this is something you can really get into quickly and have fun with. Serato Studio places creativity at the heart of its software, so you can just spend more time having fun, getting your ideas out. It's great for making any style of music, and no matter if you're a beginner or an advanced producer, there's tons of features for you to play with. And you can use it in conjunction with whatever software you're already using. It seamlessly integrates. They really thought of it all. And right now, there's a free 14-day trial for you. All you got to do is go to www.serato.com/studio. Go there right now. Download the trial for free. Make some beats. Have some fun. Send me what you make. I always love hearing what you guys are working on. And big shout out to Serato Studio. That's serato.com/studio. Like I said, if there are any producers out there, I always love hearing what you're working on. And even if you don't make music, just in general, I love staying in touch with everybody out there. So make sure to hit me up. backtobackpod@gmail.com is the email address. Connecting with all of you is one of the most fun parts of doing this show. I say that a lot, but it is true. And you can also connect with me on social media at Willie Joy or at Back to Back Pod. If you're enjoying the show, if you want to support us and help us out, you can always tag me in your stories. You could put up a tweet. You could even just repost something that I put out there. And what happens then is not only are you helping support us, support this community, helping make the show better, but we also get to connect. I get to meet you guys. There really is this awesome community around the show. And talking to you every week is something I really look forward to. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, comment. If you want to go even deeper, you can go check out the Back to Bangers playlist on Spotify that I do every week. The link for that is in the description of this episode. And as always, big shout out to everyone supporting Back to Back. All right, so for this conversation with Quix, we met up a little while ago out in DC before he was playing a show there that night. I went over to his hotel, a fairly ridiculous sort of old mansion, state house looking hotel, and we sat in this sort of grand, regal-looking room and had an awesome conversation. I have this relationship with a lot of producers out there. I think this is a pretty common thing. Quix and I have known each other online for a long time, been aware of each other's work. I've always been a fan, but we just never crossed paths until now. So in a way, it was like seeing an old friend, and in another way, it was like meeting a total stranger. I like those interactions, though. I like that energy. And he could not have been a sweeter guy. So much fun to talk to. Really smart, really funny guy. I found his background so interesting. I wanted to talk a lot about how he developed his sound. You know, no one else really sounds like Quix. He sort of nailed that signature style kind of right off the bat. So we dig into that. And of course, I'm just stoked to see what he does because I think he's really one of the people out there pushing things forward. One of my favorite phrases, one of my favorite things to think about. So this was a treat. Don't forget to go grab all of his new music. He's going back on tour. He's kind of always on tour. As always, there's going to be a link in the description of this episode where you can go grab all of that information, all the music in that link. So let's get into it right now. I'm stoked on this one. Hope you guys enjoy. This is me and Quix back to back. Let's go. Do you need anything? You good? You comfy?
I've got a little iced coffee here.
Oh, beautiful.
Do you need anything?
No, I'm okay. I was thinking about getting some coffee before I showed up here too, but that with me, that's real dicey.
Don't worry, like, I'll be your coffee. I'm okay, going to just hype you up.
Okay, good.
Let's go.
Hey! Yeah, you're my motivational coach. Ow.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry. I beat you sometimes.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I deserved it.
Are we going? Are we recording right now?
We're going, baby.
Oh, snap.
So how you feeling, man?
Good.
You good?
I'm really good.
Were you able to rest up at all from that two-day travel day you were just telling me about?
Yeah. Like, most of the time when we're on the road, you kind of get little opportunities to rest up, and you take them when you can, and when you can't, you're just going to have to suck it up. Deal yeah. with it. But we've done some crazy ass times where we've had, you know, like 24 hour days and within like flight days, like after EDC.
Yeah.
I did like a 5:30 a.m. or 4:40 to 5:30 a.m. set
right.
on the Friday
yep.
like going into Saturday. And we had been up that whole day. So it was coming close to 24 hours and then went back to the strip, had 2 hours sleep. Went to the airport, took a flight to Denver, connected in Denver, and then go to Kansas City. And then we got to Kansas City by about 10 p.m., had dinner, straight to the show, did the show. And we were sleeping a little bit on the flight, which was okay. But we then had a 7 a.m. flight back to L.A. the next day. And then we stayed up that whole day on Sunday till about 10 p.m.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know why we did that, but we just did. I don't know.
Yeah, well, sometimes your body, I feel like, just accepts that this is what it's going to have to
deal
with.
This is what's happening, body. Yeah. I'm sorry. And also, I think people don't realize, you know, like people go, oh, I need my 8 hours sleep. And that's cool. But also, your body can like take like small like individual naps and actually sustain itself off that, which is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, aren't there some like famous inventors or people who had their own sleep system where it was like, well, no, I sleep for like an hour every 4 hours or something. Yeah. And then they
just stay up.
Right.
And they just keep working and they stay up and when they're tired or they just have a little nap and then they get up after that and it's like they just keep going. It's
yeah. I mean, I don't know that I could do that. That sounds like it would drive me completely insane. But I will say it is amazing how just a tiny amount of sleep or even just rest can like totally reinvigorate you when you need it. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like for me, if I'm in some city, I have to go play a show. I haven't slept. I'm exhausted. If I just lay down and close my eyes for like 10, 15 minutes, and if I'm able to relax, I don't really do meditation, but maybe it's something close to that.
Right.
Like, I can, that's enough, you know? It's,
yeah.
It's maybe not great, but it's enough.
And it's important to make sure you go sleep with your sleep cycle, which is I think like every 45 minutes.
It's 90 minutes, I think, is 90. A full cycle.
Oh, it's a full cycle. Yeah. So 90 minutes is a full cycle because you get up halfway through your cycle, you're going to feel like absolute
yeah,
crap.
That's when you're sluggish. There's there's this whole thing called sleep inertia too, where if you break the cycle early or if you oversleep, like sleep in too much, then your body just naturally wants to stay in that state too. It's such a bizarre.
And the only way to get out of that, me and Olivia, my wife, were talking about it, you have to have like an extremely cold shower. You have to like shock your body out of that mode.
Yeah.
And then you get out of that. I remember a couple of weeks ago or something like that, we weren't touring and I had a good like 8-9 hour sleep. And the day before I'd had like no sleep for some reason.
Yeah.
And so the day before I woke up and I was like, oh, I'm feeling a little bit tired, whatever. And then I had the 9 hour sleep or whatever. And I woke up out of the sleep cycle and I was like, even worse
right.
than the shorter sleep I had. Anyway,
yeah,
it's crazy.
It's bizarre, man. I'm really stoked you brought up the sleep cycle thing because that's something I tell people about all the time. I feel like people don't know about that.
Right.
It's I always try to sleep in increments of 90 minutes if possible.
I talk about sleeping in increments of 90 minutes, but I don't do that.
Yeah.
I'm just too lazy to do the calculation.
Oh, and I mean, I'm not perfect either, but all I'm saying is like if I have, you know, a 2.5 hour window to sleep, I will cut it and set my alarm for just 1.5 hours.
Instead of having the extra and making yourself feel bad.
And I don't, to be honest, like, I don't know what I'm talking about, but it's been working okay for me.
As long as it's working, you feel good, then yeah, cool.
It seems like in the last couple of years, like my perception of you in the last couple of years is you just sort of exploded out of New Zealand, more or less.
Right,
And hit the States. And it just seems like you've been on tour sort of constantly. Does it feel that way?
Yeah, the last like 2.5 years has felt kind of like a blur where it, like there's always been, you know, a new tour on the horizon and there's always been more shows. My agent's been like working his butt off and my whole team is amazing.
You're with the APA, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Corey Riskin, absolute legend. And in a way, I really trusted my team to give me the right shows and to lead me in the right way for touring, but also to balance that out with music and creating music. Because if you tour for like a year straight and don't put any music out, you kind of can burn yourself out.
Oh, yeah.
If you
it's super dangerous.
If you don't have anything to like stand on anymore, because people will be like, oh, sick, you know. I guess he toured Supernatural off like super well, and then that was great. But like, what's the next thing? Like, what else has he got? And so, kind of after the first year of touring, I was like, oh snap, I have no music.
Right.
I need to make some music. So, the start of this year was awesome. We got like, we specifically cut off the first like 3 months of the year to no shows, no touring, and just sessions and music making, and to kind of like get a bunch of ideas down that could be really cool for the rest of 2019, continuing on further to 2020, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's kind of cool, man. I like that kind of method where it sounds like just in a creative space, making a lot of stuff, not necessarily knowing what it's going to end up being.
Right.
And just kind of stocking yourself up with ideas.
It's like stocking the fridge up from like, from going to the grocery store. But you kind of, you buy a bunch of stuff, but you don't know what you can make with it
at the moment. Right, yeah.
Maybe, like there's a few things that you know could be good, like, you know, some like some like pastas and some salads and some like meat and potatoes. I don't know what
it's like those delivery boxes you get where they don't tell you what it is and you just get a box each week.
Yeah. those look pretty good. I would consider getting some of them, but then again, me and my wife love to cook.
Right.
A lot of people I've found in LA love to not cook and just
kinda, that's weird. I love to cook as well.
Yeah.
And actually, we did do that box thing for a while. It was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
I think it's not a bad thing, people not wanting to cook. Maybe it's just how they were brought up or they just don't like it.
Sure. Oh, yeah. No, I don't judge anyone for not cooking. I think there's maybe something that could be said about sort of the disposable nature of Los Angeles in general.
Maybe.
But with what we do, it's like you're not home enough to reliably stock the fridge and
exactly.
cook.
Yeah. We like go on tour for like a week. We're like, Liv and I are like, oh, we need to like use up all the food. Like, what can we cook? What can we make?
Right.
Like with all this leftover food that's going to go bad in like a week's time when we get back. So
no, cooking for me is relaxing, but I can understand how for other people it would just seem like a chore, you know?
Fair enough. I mean, I love, this is weird, but I love cleaning our kitchen.
That's not weird. No, that's not weird.
Cool.
I kind of love that
too. it's so much fun. Like to when you know you're doing the last like few wipes of the bench and everything just looks slick. And also I throw all the crumbs on the ground and then I vacuum them all. So instead of like putting them in the bin, I just like push them off the counter and they go straight on the floor.
That's so
and vacuum that up. And I feel like, I don't know, that's just my little genius way of like getting rid of all those crumbs on the counter.
It's so funny you say that, man, because so my girl is getting back into town tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
And I saw that the counter was dirty. And literally before I came to talk to you, I brushed a bunch of crumbs off onto the floor knowing that I'll go and vacuum
later. Because when I was telling you just then, I was just like, that sounds a bit weird. Why are you saying this? And then I'm glad that you said that.
No, it's a thing I did literally today.
Real quick shout out. Shout out time.
Let's go.
Okay. I'm going to set this up, which is kind of funny. My boy, he used to live in New Zealand. He now lives in Australia. His name's Mitchell.
Okay.
He hit me up last week and was like, hey, bro, have you heard of this like back-to-back podcast thing? And I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm doing one next week, actually. So him and his friend Sam listen to this. Like every...
Yo, shout out to Mitchell and Sam.
Yeah, you guys are legends. Love you guys. From Australia. Mitchell, obviously, from New Zealand.
Big, big up. that's a funny thing, too. As an ignorant American, right?
Okay.
I think of Australia and New Zealand, especially before I had gotten to go to that part of the world.
Yeah.
To me, you know, like an ignorant American, it's just like, hey, you know, it's kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Whereas obviously it's two totally separate countries.
Literally.
But
yeah.
From your perspective, like growing up in New Zealand, what was your perception of Australia? Did you feel connected to them at all? Do you feel it now?
Yeah. It's sort of like we're two brothers. That, you know, when we're in our own countries, we always will like have beef and, you know,
right,
kind of just have each other on.
Yeah.
But when we are in another country, say a New Zealander and an Australian find themselves both in the US, we will be like hugging each other for dear life because we're like, whoa, we're in like, you know, we have to look out for each other.
Right.
But then when we're back in our home countries, it's like, all right, now the beef's back on. And it's just like two young brothers like growing up trying to like beat each other up.
From a New Zealander standpoint, what's like a stereotype of Australians or what is their stereotype of you? I'm so curious.
Well, I think it's now I don't want to be offensive.
But
I don't think I can be offensive because it's Australia and I could mock them as much as I want and they'll mock us as much as they want.
They seem pretty good at taking jokes.
But like it's also our accents. Now Americans don't hear the difference between our accents. And I'm going to try and give you guys the difference. So one of the biggest differences is the way we say dance.
Okay.
So you say, how dance. Would you say dance? You'd say dance.
We'd say dance.
All right. Australians also say dance.
Mm.
We say dance.
Dance.
Like, oh yeah, want to go and have a dance? And they'd be like, hey, want to go and have a dance?
Oh, that was really good what you did just there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the biggest differences. And I think like a lot of Australians have this kind of like high end little e, like, hey, going, mate? Yeah, how are you?
Right, right.
And then New Zealanders sound really weird and they kind of talk like this.
Right.
They have a little bit of a New Zealand accent, kind of like this. And
you trying to
Olivia,
do
was that good?
You sound South African.
No, this is a South African accent. That's a South African accent.
We're getting somewhere.
But then the New Zealand accent kind of just sounds a bit like this, where they just, they kind of have a couple of marbles in their mouth.
Right.
But that could, I don't know, that's a little island in New Zealand, like, oh, hey, bro, how you going? Oh, pretty buzzy, eh? I don't know.
Right, because then there's even like dialects or accents within New Zealand, right?
Yeah. But I feel like you find that everywhere in each individual
country. Oh, absolutely.
Especially in America, like you have, you know, your California accent, dude.
America's just big, man.
Yeah. It's a little big. It's pretty good, though.
It is so big that, I mean, there are distinct cultures and regions, like it could be several different countries and no one would bat an eye. You know what I mean?
That's awesome, man.
Was it weird for you to cut, because you live in LA now, right?
Yeah, we're based here.
Yeah. Was that an odd transition to make, going from such a small country to such a big country? I mean, obviously, there's going to be a lot of changes.
There's a lot of weird changes. LA specifically is just always sunny, which is nice. However, it's like, you know, it can get kind of dirty.
Yeah.
In LA. But
my perception of New Zealand is that it's beautiful all the time, more or less.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people in New Zealand take it for granted because they just don't know what is out there.
Sure. How much worse it could get.
But like, you know, the reason we moved was the opportunities of course. LA, which is immensely bigger. But yeah, New Zealand is very clean. It's very green. And I mean, like the weather in New Zealand can be just, you know, it could be sunny in the morning and then it can pour down lunchtime. Mm. And then you could have clouds all through the afternoon and then have like a nice, you know, clear night, evening.
Yeah.
And it, like, you know, four seasons in a day kind of thing.
Right.
So it's always, it's very unpredictable, but it is lovely to go back home.
I can imagine, man. Are you able to make it back there fairly frequently?
Yeah. We just did an Australian mini tour. We did like three shows and then I came back to New Zealand after those three shows on the weekend and spent kind of the rest of the week in New Zealand. Did a cheeky show in Auckland.
Nice.
Which was really fun.
Just like a little pop-up.
A little pop-up. And dude, like, it was nuts. I love my fans in New Zealand so much.
Well, because you're the hometown hero at this point, right?
Right. But like, it was a Wednesday. We announced it like 36 hours beforehand. People, like, kids had exams. And I played at like 12:30 to 2. And there was, and the, we like, we pretty much packed the whole club out. And it was insane. It was so much fun.
That's so cool, man.
But yeah, I definitely get to like go back home and see my family, see my friends. And,
good, man.
Shout out Ben Clary, one of my best mates back there. Love you, man.
Big shout out. I love all these shout outs.
Yeah, man. I could shout out so many people. No, it's great.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
By the end of this podcast, it's just going to be me like listening,
friends,
okay, and Charlie and Blake and Eric. Yeah, for like 12 minutes straight.
I mean, it's cool to hear about you going back there and kind of getting to throw this show that's like a homecoming kind of thing. I guess I'm wondering, when you were coming up there, was there any kind of precedent for what you would become? Like, was there a hometown hero kind of DJ or producer or even just musician that you looked up to in that same way that you would have gone to see on a Wednesday?
Oh, not real. No, not really for bass music. And drum and bass is really, really huge back in New Zealand.
Right.
And you have guys like Shapeshifter that have been crushing it for so long that are kind of like the drum and bass hometown heroes. But not really for bass music. There are so many amazing producers and DJs in New Zealand that are on the come up, which is great.
Mm.
But not really for when we were all kind of growing up a couple years ago.
I mean, were there even a lot of producers in general when you were coming up in
New
Zealand?
Was definitely a few.
Yeah.
That were really making waves. I found like my popularity was more online on SoundCloud, and it was like more of a social presence online social presence than like an actual thing within New Zealand. And I feel like what made me more recognized in New Zealand was my online presence being shown back to New Zealand. So like my, so I'd come over to the States and I'd play like a Nocturnal Wonderland, and there'd be like 8,000 to 10,000 kids in front of me with like one shot, like a fire and fireworks going off. And right. then all that footage would be like showed back to all the people in New Zealand, and then their perception level would kind of rise.
Of course.
So I feel like it wasn't so much I went out in New Zealand and did a whole lot of digging and, you know, made myself the biggest thing in New Zealand. It kind of just happened naturally off. There was no one else from New Zealand actually right. doing this right now.
And if at the time, like you were saying, that maybe the scene for the kind of music that you were making wasn't even that big in New Zealand, then I would imagine there's a pretty low ceiling on sort of how much you could blow up locally before,
yeah.
you know.
There was definitely a scene. It wasn't huge, but it was like passionate scene, which is always like
I mean, that's
amazing.
A beautiful thing. Yeah.
I remember what's a real, like a really special kind of moment for me was when I went to my very first, two special things. Let's go. One, first thing was my first club show as Quicks. I did a back-to-back with one of my best mates, DJs down there, producers called T1R.
Okay.
We did a little back-to-back and we opened for Loudpack.
Nice.
On a Wednesday night at this this club called Cassette 9. And my first ever show in the States was in New York City, Webster Hall.
Oh, beautiful.
And I was closing out after Loudpack.
Oh, okay.
And so...
Again, the Loudpack connection.
So it was like my first club show in New Zealand as Quicks opening. First show in the States as Quicks, closing for Loudpack.
And
they made this huge deal about it. It was so amazing and awesome. And the first thing I ever said on the microphone in the States was, America! That was the first thing I said. I was just like, I need to like have the first thing I say ever to like a crowd
right.
that I'm DJing for. It's like, not like, hey, what's up? My name's Quicks. Yeah. I come from New Zealand. Not just, America! Like as loud as I can.
The rallying cry.
Yeah.
That's so cool. That's a great story, man. That must have been such a fun moment to be like, hey, guys, I made it. Like, I'm
yeah,
here.
Exactly. And I remember like pulling up photos from like when I actually did the first club show at Cassette 9. Being like, hey, do you remember this? Like, hey, this is when what happened? Anyway, and then the second thing, it was 2018, last year, probably 1 month ago, this time last year, 1 month ago, sorry,
yeah.
in like May, I played a venue called The Studio in New Zealand, and it's about 1,000 cap, hard ticket, and we sold it out a week in advance, which was
huge,
amazing,
huge.
The really cool thing about this was the first ever event show, like DJ show I ever went to was Tonight at The Studio.
Oh, wow.
Same venue that I sold out.
Right.
And that was a really, really amazing moment for me because I remember that night I went with my boy Mitchell and Ben. We both, we all as a trio, we went to that show, watched Tonight play, and it was like their second to last show before they broke up.
Right.
And I remember being in the crowd watching the show. And then when I finally played the venue like 2-3 years later and had sold it out and it was like my homecoming show, that was a really special moment for me to
I can only imagine.
And another funny moment about the Tonight show was I was sober driving for my two buddies, Ben and Mitchell, and I parked my car in like a car park building about two blocks away. And then after the show, it was like 3 a.m., 3:30. We went back to the car park building and all the doors were like the cage was shut.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we were like, oh, can't get the car out. We'll have to come back in the morning. And it was about a 10-minute drive home. It was about it was about 6 or 7 kilometers, which I think is like 3 or 4 miles.
Yeah.
And we're way too cheap to like get a cab.
Of course.
So we're like, stuff it. We're just going to like walk home. And it was like, I'm so glad we did because every time we every time we get together, we always talk about that walk home and how I was their sober walker. And we stopped off at this like gas station and got drinks and a pie and hit it home. And it was, that's just like a classic Ben Mitchell and Jono story.
That sounds great, man. Those are like my favorite moments in life, man. I've got so many of those kind of stories with my friends from back home. to have it actually tied into something that then later relates to what you end up doing with your life. I mean, that's huge.
It's so weird and amazing.
It's crazy too. While you were telling those stories, I was thinking about how quickly things change. Because like you mentioned, so your first show was at Webster Hall.
Yeah.
Which then...
In the States, yeah.
In the States, right. Which is gone, now back, but
now
it was
back,
gone.
In a different way.
Right. With Loudpack, who are now gone.
Right. Unfortunately.
And the other story with Tonight, who are now just getting back together, right?
Wow.
Say according to the rumors.
According to the rumors.
Yeah.
I haven't really researched any of that, but yeah, I do hope they like me.
I mean, sure, we all do. I'm just saying it's so funny because like that doesn't seem that long. It's just a few years ago.
No.
And then all these things went away and the whole landscape feels like it's changed.
Yeah.
I was actually just in New York a couple weeks ago and I got to go to the new Webster Hall.
Oh, yeah.
It looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
To be honest, I was kind of worried what they were going to do with it. It felt pretty much the same.
That's good.
Yeah.
Because it's now it's not a club anymore. It's now a proper venue. Is that right?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, so for a long time, it was the longest running like independent venue in New York of its size.
Yeah.
And then it got shut down and AEG bought it. And so now it's like a corporate venue, you know, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Which I always have mixed feelings about. But, you know, to be honest, I went there and it seemed great. Seemed like the same thing. Maybe a little cleaner.
I know for like so many people, that venue was like, had a special place in their heart, you know, and it was kind of sucky to watch it, you know, not go away and come back as something else. But
yeah, I mean, it was a fixture of New York for so many years. And I think for our scene, it was such a welcoming place, you know, like, I don't think I've ever had a bad show there.
Wow.
You know?
My first show there was insane. I mean, I closed it out, which was like a 3 to 4 a.m. set.
Sure.
So it started strong. And then by the end of it,
people get tired.
People are like, see you later. It was a good first half of your set, but I'm tired. So, but that's okay.
Well, that
happens.
This is actually, I'm glad you brought this up because this is a funny thing that I think only DJs and performers can understand is especially when you're just on the come up like that, right?
Yeah.
So you're not the headliner, but you're like a featured artist.
Yeah.
And there's always that question of, do you want to take the slot before the main person or after the main person?
Right.
Because that's usually an option for clubs that are open so
because
late.
you have two pros on your hand. You have an opportunity. It's like if you're opening before the headliner, you have the last half of your set. It's going to be the best.
Yep.
Or if you're closing after the headliner, the first half of your set is going to be the best.
Absolutely.
Those other halves are when people are arriving and when people are leaving.
Yep. And it's an energy thing too, I think, because beforehand, people are, you know, potentially just wanting to see the headliner, right?
Yep.
And so then maybe they're not going to pay as much attention. But afterwards, the headliner will have just blown out the room, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's harder to sort of keep that energy going.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. I would always end up picking that I wanted to open instead of close.
Totally. I think that's a smarter option. Closing, also it's later. And if it's a club show, closing, you're getting home at 5.
That's also true, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Take care of yourself.
Yeah. I had a scenario where I had the opportunity, like back when Marshmallow was just blowing up over that like Adele remix did.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to either open for him or close for him in Brisbane. And their team specifically said, hey, if someone's opening for Marshmallow, they need to, you know, not drop bangers.
You need
to warm up. And they need to be a warm-up DJ or someone who plays a lot softer. So then, and in my head, I was like, oh, I really want to play bangers.
Yeah.
So I'm going to play afterwards.
Yeah.
But what I didn't realize is that after Marshmallow played, he was like, hey, thank you guys so much. I'm also going to be taking photos with everyone at the back. No. So then I jump on and
everyone kind of turns around.
But there was like a lot of people that stayed around, which was cool. Also, it's funny, that particular show was the first time that I played on CDJ Nexus 2s.
Oh, okay.
The newest
the
CDJ.
The new models at the time, right.
Yeah. And I didn't do sound check.
Yeah.
So I like rock up and I'm like, what are these? Yeah. These look crazy. Like I can see 12 tracks at a time instead of like four or whatever. So, and then also sync was on and I didn't know how to turn that off. And I was hilarious.
Yeah, that's an amazing. The whole picture is amazing.
I'm like this confused like kid trying to like figure out what to do, playing throwing elbows or something like that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's interesting that they, even at that kind of early stage of Marshmello, they were that aware. Because I think the whole thing with Marshmello is like, it's the most meticulously planned, like shaped, crafted project, you know, just like.
It's very well done.
Yeah, it's very, very well done. And it's interesting to hear that even in those early stages, they were thinking about those little details you know, the opener needs to be someone who sounds like this, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And to relate it back to you, it makes me wonder, you know, we've been talking about how the last couple of years, it's been this whirlwind. You've just been going. You are a new face. Now I feel like you're somewhat of an established face. Yeah. Have you thought about, either with your team or just on your own, more of how you want to craft, you know, the vision of the Quicks project?
Oh, yeah.
Because I have to imagine when you were just starting off, it was just everything's exciting. Let's do everything, you know, that kind of vibe.
I think, yeah, we definitely tone it in and get, you know, picky with how things look and how we want things to be. I've got an amazing wife that crushes the vision and creative process of the Quicks brand and what we want it to look like all the, like the artwork for all the songs. And,
yeah, it seems very cohesive. I was looking at the discography last night.
Right. Yeah. And, but like when I first started out, like I just wanted visuals that had, you know, my logo that kind of bounced around, like, like there was like a subwoofer,
like a visualizer.
I just wanted that on loop. And then I just, you know, I just wanted strobes and I was just like, oh, let's just make a crazy party. But now I'm kind of like, all right, now we have like proper themed visuals. And one thing that I never thought would be a key factor in my project would be my face.
Mm.
Everyone obviously knows that I have a beard.
Yeah.
The long hair, kind of like the, you know, I'm a bit of a stocky guy. I'm a tall guy.
Yeah, you're identifiable.
So, yeah, like I never knew that my face would like then become so iconic using the beard. And so there's like a lot of times where I'm like, oh, I just want to chop it off and like start again. And Olivia's like, no. And my team's like, no, that's not happening. You keep the beard and you can trim it a little bit, but like it stays. Like it's important for the project. Yeah. I'm like, oh,
it's
okay.
The third member of
it's
the group.
It's the third. Yeah. It gets commissions. Don't worry. Right. I'm paying my beard a little bit of money to like keep it on there. Yeah. And he, you know, he gets compensated. Yeah.
It gets its own room.
Yeah. Gets its own rider and everything.
That's
so good.
Funny. What's, do you know Buku?
Yeah. Oh, the festival or the artist?
Good question. The artist.
Yeah.
The artist, good friend of mine who up until recently had this massive beard that he'd been growing for a year. He just shaved it off like a couple weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
And there was like an outcry from his fans. Like people were mad.
Oh, no.
And now he's growing it back instantly.
Instantly. Yeah. I'm not touching it.
I mean, shout out to Buku. I don't think you're doing that because people got mad at you, but it was a funny thing to watch. Like people really were invested in his beard.
Who cares, man, honestly. Nah. Interesting
funny,
story about Buku. I found him via Pandora.
Yes. Shout out to Pandora.
Oh my gosh. So I was flicking through and I'm pretty sure I just typed like trap music into Pandora because I was just like, oh, I need to find some new trap music, dude. And one of his songs, far out, I can't remember the song. I think it's called All D's.
All D's, yeah.
That came up and a few others. And once I found him, I was like locked onto him.
Yeah.
And it was almost like hilarious that I never thought Pandora could provide me the, you know, that kind of music. And I thought it was like, oh, it's probably going to like show up like a bunch of weird, you know, weird trap music that I don't like. But like it came through with like heat, like Buku came up. I'm like,
that's awesome.
Like this guy's crazy. Oh, and then I found him and then I'm like, oh, yes.
Right. Then you're off to the races. Two things on that as an example of how, why it's important to think about the branding and the visual and all that.
Yeah.
Like Pandora somehow went wrong somewhere along the way, right? Like all of us think that that's Pandora's like less cool than other services, but I don't know why we think that.
Yeah, like I always thought Pandora was the only service that would provide, you know, like, you know, if you type in one song, it'd be like, by the way, here's a whole bunch of other songs that are like that to introduce you to more music, which is, I mean, there are those, I don't know what you call it, those types of services like on SoundCloud, like related tracks, you know.
And Spotify is getting
better
with
that.
A little bit of it,
but like Pandora was specifically like that. Yeah. I don't know why it, like, I never really got into it. I think I found Buku and I was just like, probably that's it.
Yeah, that's all I needed from you, Pandora.
Buku was enough.
And the other thing I was going to say, which it just makes me think of the stories you were telling earlier, is Buku was the first artist I really toured the country with. And so I have all these early memories
that
I think are very similar to the ones you were just talking about of us being in weird places and weird situations.
Buku definitely was like a big inspiration to me to like influenced some of like my earlier sound and flow and that rhythm.
I think one parallel I could draw between the two of you guys is that both of you sort of came out with these really unique sounds. Like it was very identifiable as you and as him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
100%. I could tell, you know, you play me 10 tracks that all kind of sound similar and there'll be one Buku track and I'll be like, yeah, that's Buku.
Yeah. And that's just a different kind of inspiration to me too, is just to see somebody so fully like, nope, this is just me. This is what I do, and not be so affected by the trends or the hot sounds.
Yeah.
Cause I, even when I was touring with him, you know, he was playing mostly his own material, which as a new artist is a ballsy move.
Definitely.
But to bring it back to you, I've been all over the place with this interview, but I want to talk about sort of, you know, we mentioned the New Zealand and coming up in New Zealand, but I'm sort of curious, you know, before you even had thoughts to that DJing could be a thing that you could do that could bring you to America and have this whole career. Like what kind of a kid were you? What were you doing? I have to assume you were musical in some way.
Yeah, definitely musical. I started playing drums. I actually, before then, when I was like 6 or 7, my mom got us piano lessons. And I learned piano for about a year or two. And then I really wanted to play drums. I would go, I was brought up in a Christian home, go to church, and I would see the drummer play. And I'd be like,
oh, so you had like a full band in church?
There was like a full band, like guitarist, bass, singers, keyboard, drums. And I wanted to be the drummer. And it just looks so cool. And to be able to play like on the stage, I was like,
right.
Rock and roll, man. Like, it looks so cool. So for ages, I just wanted to play drums. And I would tell mom, and I mean, I would be banging on pots and pans and like have all these like rhythms in my head. And I just needed to express that somehow. And so when I was 9, mom got me some drum lessons. And I did it with my best mate, Aaron. And we both learned drums together and this is funny because like both of us were going to different churches and he would like be trying to get into his church band and I would be trying to get into my church band.
Oh, that's so funny.
And it would be like the subtle competition, like who could, you know, like, oh, I was, you know, I'm rostered to play this Sunday but I wasn't. I'd be like, damn, like I'm like bummed, but then I was rostered and he wasn't
How do you get rostered? Like, how does that process even work?
There's like a whole team within the church. There's like a whole team that does this, like the band.
Right.
And so they'd.
And like, would they just like rotate kids in and out?
Kind totally. Of? Yeah. And so that, I mean, like a lot of the musicians were like, you know, adults who, you know, were really good.
Yeah.
And so they would, you know, it'd be like there'd be people that actually worked at church as well that were on staff that would be playing each week. And then there were also like volunteers that would play each week. Or not each week, but maybe like once every month or something like that. I would, and so like growing up in church as well, I would want to play like every week because it's just like you get to play with a band. It was fun. You could rock out.
Right.
And, and the songs were like really fun. And like, you know, some like right now, like, you know, within the church music, it's very pop and mainstream and also like a little bit EDM, which is cool.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's like got like this dance music feel to like a lot of like the faster praiser, crazier songs.
Right,
so,
right. I could see that actually. That's smart. That makes sense.
Yeah,
now that I think about it.
It's pretty cool. But anyway, going back to when I was like growing up, it would, yeah, I would, I learned drums and then also jumped onto playing like bass guitar and then got, I'd forgotten everything about piano.
Right.
And then I saw one of my friends just being able to, you know, play a bunch of chords on piano. I was like, how do you do that? Like, I totally forgot how to play piano. So then I learned how to just play chords and that was enough. And then I actually started playing piano in church as well.
Oh, okay.
And then after that, like while still like wanting to be rostered for drums as well. So I'd be drums, then piano. And then I went and did bass guitar as well. Cause bass guitar and drums are like the backbone of like
absolutely.
A band. So like it was awesome being able to jump on bass and like rock out there, but I never did guitar. I don't think I was good enough for guitar, but anyway, I was happy to be on bass. That was fun.
Yeah. The rhythm section of it.
It was a lot of fun and it's only four strings. And it's only one note, so I'm, it's chill. It's very easy.
Yeah, it's manageable.
But yeah, then like the whole electronic music and producing thing was cool.
How did that come to you?
I remember the very first program I had was this program called Guitar Pro 5.
Okay.
Have you heard of that?
I've heard of, but I don't really know what it is.
What it is that... it's like everything, you know, tabs on guitar and bass?
Yes, I do.
It's like that, but then you can write it in and so you have your whole guitar, you have your guitar neck and all, you know, all the lines going across and then it would be, you would press, you know, play and you could put in like, okay, two on the first string and then like that would be like, you know, F sharp or whatever.
Right.
And then, so that's how you would make music. And so I made a couple of cool songs. And then also it was a great way to learn songs because you could download off, I think it's called Ultimate Guitar. They had like tabs.
I kind of remember this. I fancied myself a guitar player when I was a kid. I was terrible. I downloaded a lot of tabs.
Right. Yeah. But you could learn songs via tabs. And so you could download these songs and actually input them into Guitar Pro and then it would actually play it for you. And then you could slow the tempo down and actually learn the songs properly, which was cool. So I loved doing that. I was also homeschooled for like 6 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I had a lot of free time to just play guitar and bass and drums. And, you know, all my free time, like I would do some work in the morning and then for like morning tea, I would play guitar and like practice and play along to like one of the big Christian bands, like mainstream bands is called Hillsong. Have you heard of Hillsong?
I've heard of them, yeah.
So Hillsong Music had like lots of awesome songs out. So I would literally play along to them and not use tabs, but I would just hear it out and be like, oh, okay, it sounds like they're playing, you know, D, now they're playing A. And I would kind of figure it out and learn the chords just off hearing. And I think doing that for so long trained my ear really well to be able to play... recognize notes and recognize progressions and chords. And now like, you know, I could have a guitar and you could play me a song and I'd be able to go, okay, it's in the key of C or it's in the key of D. And I know the chords go, you know, like G, A minor, D, A, and I'd be able to figure that out like without having to see anything, which is really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. That's like you know, sort of a workaround for like traditional guitar training, right?
Yeah,
that's I like that.
It's natural and it's just being able to train my ear and also drum and being able to play practicing drums for so long. like really enhance obviously all my the rhythm and what I feel when I play, and also in my head when I think of songs and I go, okay, I know how this would feel and I know what the right rhythm is for this kind of melody and this bass line underneath. So I can always I can almost just put everything in my head and work it out. And then when I put it into, say, FL Studio, which I work out of, it kind of works, and I can transfer those ideas into the project really easy.
Yeah. That's a valuable skill, man. I think it's the hardest thing to do, to translate what's in your brain to what actually comes out of the speakers.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. It's nuts. It's really a weird thing that I know that like God's blessed me with in a way.
Are you quick with it? Like you can kind of get it down pretty fast?
I think so. I mean, I've been told I'm quite quick at it. So yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I'm just thinking of anything else that I've missed out growing up.
Like, well, I mean,
the process of getting Fruity Loops and getting onto that. So I started with Guitar Pro 5.
Right.
And then I went and, I went to school at age 14 until I was 18. So like,
so homeschooled until 14.
Yeah. And then, so it was about 3 or 4 years in school. I was like 3.5 years because I think I jumped in halfway through year 10 or whatever. That's how we do it in like year 10, year 11, year 12, 13 or whatever.
Was that a weird thing to like jump into school, like school at that age?
A little bit. It was, I just wanted structure in my life a bit, because I was kind of freaking out that after school I would have, like, you know, my dad was awesome and he did school and then he went to university and he smashed university and then he got a kick-ass job and made a bunch of money,
right?
And I was like, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
I need to do it like that. And he had been encouraging me in that way and being like, hey, like, you really need to set yourself up for a win and I don't want to see you, you know, like, fail. And, wow. And then, you know, so.
That's a lot at age 14, though, to even be thinking about that.
Well, he'd been like, it wasn't like super strict, like in my face, but it was sort of like, hey, like this is normally how it goes.
Right.
And I want, you know, you to be successful. And I was, and in my head, I was like, I want to be successful. And the only way forward right now is if I actually go to school, because like when I was at the end of my homeschooling, I was super unmotivated and I didn't do work and I just wasn't learning.
Sure.
And I just knew that I wasn't smart and it's smart enough to get into like a college or a university. So I made, and it was my decision and I knew it was the right decision to like go to school.
And your parents were sort of down with whatever your decision was.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think they were pumped because I was actually taking initiative. But I went to school and the transition into school was cool. It was a smaller school, which probably was better.
Right.
So I didn't.
Not overwhelmed.
It was not overwhelmed. It wasn't kind of crazy. It wasn't like heaps of people running around and, you know, the classic crazy school, high school vibe. But
and in a way, I mean, you get to skip. I don't know if it's the exact same system, but here, you know, there's middle school, which is like 7th, 8th, 9th grade.
Is that like 11 years old, 12?
Basically, 13? Yeah.
It's like intermediate school.
Intermediate school. And at least here, the stigma for middle school, intermediate school is like those are like the most awkward, painful times.
Yeah.
So like if you can just sort of sidestep that.
I literally sidestepped it. That's
like
awesome.
That.
Yeah. I didn't really experience that. I was at home. But the thing is, like, I would also be going to my youth group at church, and there were really cool kids there that I wanted to be like. So a lot of people think, oh, if you're homeschooled, you're probably like super weird and super antisocial because you're not around a bunch of people. You don't really brush up on like other people to, you know, mature you or whatever. But like, I was actually going to this youth group and there was a lot of cool people there that I, you know, like brushed up on. I was just like, oh, actually, like, shouldn't be weird. And this is how you talk to people.
And you're like playing in bands with people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I kind of like found my way and I was like, oh, I actually know who I am and whatnot. Anyway, so got to school and then another buddy of mine there at school was into music as well. And we're like cool best friends now. And we both found FL Studio and jumped on that. And we were both making songs together and the piano roll was like the craziest thing. I remember seeing the piano roll for the first time going like, what? it's like a vertical piano that you can play and write notes and press play and it happens and there's synths and there's like bass notes. And so we wrote a lot of like 140 BPM trance, like, it would have been like very old school, not well-produced virtual self kind of music.
Interesting. Were you listening to electronic music at the time?
Kind of. Not really. We were actually listening to a lot of metal.
Oh, okay.
So we had a lot of metal influence, but then we just wanted to write like the sickest melody riffs and everything. So we would be writing this like, like all these crazy melodies using just that like one synth and like a stupid kick drum.
Yeah. I like that you had the Christian band and the metal band, man. That's the balance right there.
Yeah. And we would go to like, there were these sick Christian metal hardcore bands.
Oh, sure.
And we used to like,
I've been to some Christian metal shows.
they're fun, man. And like I used to like get right in the pit and love it. And I feel like a lot of my heavier influence of like dance music has come from like the metal scene and the energy that is brought out of like the breakdowns and the fast moments.
A lot of people in bass music have that story, man.
Definitely.
And even you talking about wanting to write riffs, I mean, it's the same thing to me. Like especially the metal bands from a certain era, it was very groovy, it was very riff based.
Yeah.
And now in bass music, I mean, it's very much the same thing.
It's the same thing in just a different flavor. You know? But we made this like kind of old school underproduced virtual self music. And then like he kind of like dropped off and didn't want to make produce anymore. And I just knew that it was my thing. Mm. And I just wanted to keep going with it. He was the one that always had like all the new presets and sounds. Right. And I would be like, you know, hey, can you like give them to me as well? Right. I'm just using like all these stock plugins and samples and like nothing sounded cool. And yeah, he was always getting all the cool sounds. But I don't know. And then I had no audio engineering background as well. I was literally just putting stuff in and, you know, putting a reverb on it and preset, reverb, preset. Like I didn't even use compression back then. I didn't know what that was.
And I
wondered, and we were listening to like, you know, the early days of Skrillex and I was like so confused. How did he make his song so loud and so well mixed and everything? And mine just sounded really like teeny tiny plastic, stupid stuff. But yeah, it was just like a whole journey of like figuring out what this does and what that does.
I mean, was it a gradual thing, or are there any moments you can think of where like a light switched and you're like, oh, this is how this is how I can make what I'm doing sound more like.
Yeah, when I properly learned how to like compress things. I remember just you being able to, like I would use a compressor, but like preset compressing.
Right.
And I would just like find a, you know, like, oh, this is the bass preset, or this is the drum compression preset, so use that.
Right.
And obviously it would sound loud. But I think one thing that really benefited me from the early days was before I knew how to even put like master my own songs or like put compression on anything, I was really good at like mixing the song and having like, obviously all my earliest songs would be like under zero, you know, it would be like,
right,
I would have so much headroom because everything would be not compressed or loud at all, but everything would be super well mixed. And I feel like figured out actually like, oh, this is how to make stuff louder. My mixing days were already done and I brought that with me. And so my tracks then sounded fuller, sounded like cool.
You had a foundation to work on.
And I was always scared about, in the early days, I was always scared about playing my songs on big speakers at like clubs or like, I mean, not like, I mean, if I was to play it on like a, you know, on a sound system for someone in my bedroom, like that would be fine. But it was when it was mixed with other songs that had been mastered and compressed properly and mixed well, in that sense, I was always freaking out because I'm like, oh, my song's going to sound weak and not that good. But
right.
I don't know. It was just like a couple year process of like figuring out like what makes electronic music slap and big and you know, how to get my sound.
Sure. And figuring it out somewhat in isolation, right?
Right.
It's not like, you know, if there were, you know, basically you were saying you had like the one friend, there was a small community right. of people doing it. It's not like, you
there
know,
wasn't any schools. There's, right. I mean, there are schools now kind of teaching it, but I'm also super glad that I didn't go to school for it, because I learned by myself and I learned my own technique in own way, and no one else can copy that because yeah. it's me and it's my own discovery in a way.
Oh, absolutely, man. Yeah. I mean, that's what's so cool and fun about what we do, I think, is that there's no right way to do it. And if you can figure out a new way or a different way to do it, there's always room for that, right?
Yeah,
and exactly. that's almost the best thing you could do.
Yeah.
Like as a listener, that's what gets me the most excited, right? Is if yeah. I hear somebody, I'm like, what? What did they do? Like,
how did they do that? Yeah. What?
This doesn't sound like anything I've heard. Like, those are the best moments,
right?
And so I'm with you, man. There is that danger. I think with like YouTube tutorials too, there's that danger of kind of just everyone starting to use the same processes.
Look, it's good for a minute. But it's good for a minute to get a foundation yes. for yourself if you have no idea how to like make that particular sound. So what I would do is, like, if there was a YouTube tutorial on how to make the sick Z bass yeah. that he has in all of his older stuff, I was like, oh, I'll take that, but then I will try and change it in a way that I think might reflect my sound more. Or also, one of the biggest beneficial things for me when I was writing music was I found a few different ways that I could manipulate sound to make it sound like me. So like one of the classics back in the day was I would use this like weird preset on a flanger that made everything sound like, you know, it was like on a short delay, metallic. Mm. And I knew that even if I had some weird sound that was like a complete copy preset of like another person's sound, I knew that I could just chuck that flanger sound on and make it sound totally different.
Mm.
Or like, you know, put it down a few steps and see if it changes the sound at all. So there was like always these little these things in the back of my head, like these little tools or like, you know, like weapons that I could be like, oh, I'll throw that on and right. that will change it. Or, okay, that didn't work. Let's use weapon number two with the flanger.
yeah.
Or let's try and change it in this way.
Yeah. No, I do the same thing, man. I'm very similar minded that way. I like that, where it's not necessarily that you have to make everything from scratch, but you do yeah. have to like put your own spin on it.
Exactly.
You know, make it fit with sort of the way you see the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
How do you feel about the fact that now there's tutorials that are like how to make a quick sleeve?
Yeah, that's awesome. It's like flattering, man, to like know people want to copy the sound and reinvent it and use it in their own way. I think that's awesome. I think like I could get caught up on like, oh, you know, taking my sound. Oh, like screw you guys. But at the end of the day, it's making the scene bigger, and it's making people's music, you know, like, you know, people are being able to be happy, are happy now, being able right. to use a sound that was influenced from me and to better themselves and other people to be influenced by that, you know.
Do you think sort of being aware of that people are now sort of, you know, watching what you're doing and trying to figure out how you made certain songs or certain sounds, does that push you to innovate more as well yourself?
Definitely. Yeah. Like, it's a weird thing because I obviously, you know, back in the day when I was writing music that now is considered really cool, or it was considered cool back then, but like, I mean, music that was pretty revolutionary and it didn't really exist back then, I didn't realize that I was making those kind of songs.
Right.
I thought I was just making a song that could be cool to listen to, and that's that.
Yep.
So back then I was, you know, I wasn't intending on this being a thing.
Mm.
And I think that's where a lot of people get caught up, and they're like, when I'm making this sound right now, it's got to be a thing. And they think about it too much. And
yep.
it's moments where you don't realize what you're doing that other cool moments. And even like putting songs out that you don't even think are like anything. Like I remember putting out a song called Deep Home. And the reason I called it Deep Home was because it was the only deep house track that I've ever made. Mm. But I just called it Deep Home. Like, who cares?
Right.
And I had so many of my like friends from New Zealand that were like really into house music hit me up going, dude, this is my favorite house music song ever. And I was like, what?
Yeah, right.
Seriously?
Right.
I can't, like, really? Oh, that's interesting. And I remember, if people know the song, it has these, like, horns in it and this this wobby bass line. And I didn't think it was anything at all. I was just like, like, cool house song, whatever. Right. And then put it on the EP, and it was like, play Deep Home, play yeah. it. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Those unexpected hits, man, that's a beautiful thing too. I mean, that's this is sort of related to what we've been talking about this whole time, but I think that's such a hard place and a hard balance to find is sort of, you know, being aware of how you're being perceived, right? Like we talked about, there is this quick sound, quote unquote,
right.
and people trying to figure it out. And you know that they're, you know, that you have fans now, right?
Right.
But then you also, as an artist, want to put yourself in that sort of innocent place where you can just create without those expectations.
Dude, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, especially because a lot of my songs are like, I want like every release that I make, every release that I do, I want it to sound different and unique and innovative. But I also have been, you know, a producer for a while, and I want to better my sound and better my production.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you're, sometimes when you better yourself or like you gain more skill in production, your sound will change. And A lot of my older stuff back in the day, I had no idea what I was doing, but somehow got lucky and made it sound cool.
Oh, yeah.
And that back then is like in the past. I can't really go back there because
you know what you're doing now.
Because now I know what I'm doing. And like, and I'll go back and I'll be like, why am I trying to stereo shape my 808s? You know?
Right.
Like yeah, okay, yeah. go and listen to my song, my remix for Nightmare and Slander. It's called You.
Okay.
And I stereo shaped my 808. And you can go and laugh at me. But back then I just had no idea what I was doing. And it was that kind of innocence of music making that made my sound great. But now with all the, you know, production techniques and all my, you know, knowledge now that I've learned, my sound changes and I want it to sound cleaner and bigger and stronger. And, you know, so like it's this weird balance that I try and make with it.
I really like that remix you just did for Alice in Wonderland, man.
Oh, cool.
I mean,
thank you.
That I don't know when you made it, but it just dropped. And that to me seemed like kind of maybe an evolution of your sound, because it still sounded like we were saying, like very uniquely you.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I could tell you made it, but it also sounded fairly different.
Right. Oh, thanks. I made it about a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
So I started about a month or two ago and finished it in the last, like a month ago, maybe. So it was actually a really quick remix that came about. And I actually had the second drop as the first drop, which is that.
I was actually wondering about that.
Yeah. So I had that as the first drop and it was really cool. And I wanted this crazy percussion, like, and I barely write any songs at 90 BPM.
Right.
Which is different for me. So I really wanted to like try and make something special without like, I don't know. I was kind of conflicted I was wondering, should I speed the tempo up to like 120, 130 and make it really fast, or slow it down to like 150 or like 70, 150.
Sure.
75, 150. But the second drop was the first drop. And then after making that crazy lead drop, I was like, okay, how do I like, you know, bring this around? And then I made what is now the first drop.
Right.
And that was really strong. And I was like, oh, that's really a really beautiful way to like interpret the song.
Yeah.
And everyone that I showed it to, and they were like, dude, this is amazing. But that, what your second drop is needs to be your first drop, and it needs to, you need to hit hard with that strong drop and then bring them back and in a way pay people off, like,
right,
thanks for listening and here's some classic quicks.
Right,
at the very
exactly
end,
you know? I like that, because that's exactly right. It felt like a nod to, like, yes I know
I can make chords, right. And one thing I really thought was special about the remix was these, like, these percussion fills right in before the synth,
the synth chords
came in. And that was really, that was kind of like, hey, here's a bit of like percussion quicks and then into some beautiful chords. And then the payoff at the end was that weird synth lead, weird, wonky, I don't know. What do you even call it?
But. I have no idea, man. I mean, it almost sounded like an old G-funk synth, like,
right,
from, you know, like 90s hip hop, like West Coast stuff.
Right.
I'm assuming that was not the inspiration, but it, to me, it was kind of cool because there's always those connections, right?
Like, right. That's interesting to like hear, oh man, this song influenced me. It made me feel like it was this kind of vibe. And I'm like, I've never heard that vibe before. So...
I mean, maybe we just answered our own question of how you sort of evolve as an artist and maintain that is, you know, that's a song you made with full sort of awareness of where your career is at, where you're at with it, but it, you still sort of managed to push it forward in a way, right?
Right, yeah. It was a fun remix to make as well. And I had just bought a guitar just before then, so... There's so many guitar parts on it.
Are you playing? Have you always played a lot of guitar in your productions, or are you starting to now?
Starting to now because I finally got a guitar.
Right.
Every time there was like a guitar around or like on like at a studio, I'd just be like, "Hey, do you mind if I play it?"
Right. And that's another feather in your cap or like tool in your tool belt, right?
Yeah, totally.
That's another way you can evolve is like bring in a new instrument, like an actual different instrument.
When I got the guitar, it was like a new way. It was like a new plugin because I wouldn't, you know, like, oh, I want like a lead sound or I want some kind of plucky melody to like come through, but I don't want to just keep bringing up massive and finding that classic pluck or I don't know, whatever, but using the guitar felt organic and fresh, and I was like, oh man, this sounds awesome. And using the guitar with a Guitar Pro on Fruity Loops is just, oh, it's amazing. You can get so many good sounds out of it.
I've never played around with that, man.
Even using Guitar Pro for like other things like synths and like as an effect is really weird and cool.
I love running. I used to have some old guitar pedals that I would run synths through.
Nice.
And that was always really fun. I haven't done that in years.
Yeah, right. But. Sometimes it's really cool to experiment with sounds and create new stuff and be weird with it. Even like getting a microphone and like, you know, like singing into it and then auto-tune yourself with some distortion and making weird, you know, like choppy synth like things or vocal chops out of it, or like, you know, being creative, or you just get back to, you know, like bringing up a plugin and just making a synth bass and putting a drum kit over it and having like a classic sound. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's lots of ways you can go be creative, but sometimes like I haven't experimented too much with like creating my own synths, like organically.
Right.
I feel like if you sit too long with like a synth or like a, you know, I'm EQing my kick drum or EQing my snare or my, you kind of lose some creativity and you can be like, you could lose the moment in what you're trying to do.
But. Yeah, it's true. And I think for me, that was something I had to accept that it just wasn't my thing. And I think I've even talked about this on the show before, because there are some people who are like wizards of synthesis and they love doing it, right? And for them, that is creativity. And that's, you know, sort of how they get their artistic rocks off, like is by making those sounds from scratch. And for me, that's just not, it doesn't do it for me, you know?
Right, right.
Like, there's other parts of making music that I find much more exciting, and so I want to get to those parts, you know?
Yeah.
And exactly what you said, not lose the vibe of whatever I'm trying to do at the time.
Sure.
Well, what about you, man, as far as what you're doing right now, what you've got coming up? Like, do you set goals? Are you a goal-oriented person?
I could definitely, like, set goals, definitely. And I feel like... without me sitting them in my head, like out on paper, or like speaking them out, or like properly organizing that, I definitely just have goals in my head. Like, I want to be, you know, selling out, you know, big rooms, yeah, and, you know, like giving back to the fans and making insane music and having a song blow up and all that. But yeah,
those are good goals.
Those are definitely great goals, and I've said them now, and I'm continuing to do it. I have a really special track with Adventure Club that is on its way out, which is really, really cool.
That's awesome. I'll be excited for that, man.
I think it's one of my favorite songs that I've made with them. I've only made one song with them,
so
but
it's definitely your favorite song.
It's definitely
made with them.
It's one of my favorite songs I've made, and I'm really excited to put it out.
Love those guys.
What else? I just put out this song called "Guiding Light," which is the weirdest, hardest song that I've.
I got that. I like that song.
Thanks,
I got that,
man,
on promo. You've been putting out a bunch of stuff. I feel like I get your songs on promo all the time.
Oh, nice. That's great. I feel like over the last, you know, as I said before, the 3 months of this year was straight writing.
Yeah.
And I wrote a lot of songs and did a lot of sessions with writers and singers and then a lot of downtime to just write beats and just write some cool stuff. So yeah, we have been putting like a lot of cool music out lately, which is awesome. But you know, like, it's just part of the job.
Yeah,
you know,
man.
Like part of the vibe to keep going and putting music out. And What was really special and exciting was going after the 3 months of like no shows, was going to play in cities where my fans were, and like remembering that I have fans that love me and love my music and want to come and support me. And that was so special. Mm. That was like, oh man, like I actually have kids that love my music and that they're real. They're not just like
comments.
They're not comments or streams or stream numbers or whatever. So
that's really cool, man. It's great to get that confirmation, that reminder of sort of, you know, now that you're here, like what's going to keep you going, right?
Yeah.
It's that people really actually want to hear what you're about to do.
Exactly.
That's a beautiful thing, man. While you were talking, it just, it made me think you were talking about being in the studio, the writing process for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked earlier about sort of how you kind of came to it in a unique way, learned it on your own. And just, you know, thinking back about everything we've talked about, sort of your upbringing, you were playing in the Christian bands, listening to that kind of music as well as the metal music.
Mm.
This is maybe not a conscious thing, but do you think those influences, like whether it's being raised as a Christian or coming from loving the metal sound, but being in New Zealand where it's sort of being filtered to you and isolated in a weird way, do you think that has affected your songwriting process or continues to affect your songwriting process? Like, do you take any of those influences into what you do now?
Oh, 100%. Like when you say songwriting, are you talking about literally like writing lyrics or writing like actual just beats
one.
Or music?
Either one,
just
anyone.
I've like, since getting into lots of sessions with singers and songwriters, I've learned to like jump into the whole songwriting lyrics, and that's crazy.
Yeah, that's a whole new ball game.
And to not only just writing like lyrics that rhyme, but like actually stuff that means stuff, like means something and is rememberable, and the melody is insane, and like, you know, to like create like a really awesome hook and all that. But I know in my personal life, I know like God was preparing the whole way for me to be where I am right now, and is also preparing me right now for in the next 2 years what I'm going to do.
Mm.
You know, so I believe that I've been you know, blessed with so many talents and skills to be here in this moment, and all of those individual moments of, you know, back when I was a young producer, early producing days, when I was stressed out, or like, not stressed out, but like bummed out from not being able to make something sound cool, or seeing other friends of mine blow up, or, you know, stuff that I wanted to do, feeling jealous in that sense. Like I'm just really glad that I just kept my head down and like worked hard for it. And I know that out of all the, you know, like the tough times in the last like 3 or 4 years of, you know, moving over here with next to no money, trying to make it, and also married, which is the one of the key things that has really made me stay sane, I think.
Of course.
Yeah, definitely agree that, you know, all those tough times back in the day of like trying to make it to where I was now. And I mean, like that definitely helped, but I don't think, I mean, I didn't really have like a clear vision of like, I want to be, you know, playing DC and doing a back-to-back podcast. You know, but like, I didn't really have specific, you know, like I want to be doing this. It's called, it's sort of like I almost just fell into this journey and finding the right management team and the agent, and like I know that I've just been blessed so much in this process.
I mean, that must be reassuring. I say this as someone who's not particularly religious, but hearing you talk about it, I mean, that must be reassuring in a way, right? That if you say, you know, you feel that this is a path you've been set on, or that someone is looking out for you,
right?
That's kind of nice. That's beautiful to hear, man.
And I know God's watching out. And he's got my back, but it's also he's put other people in place. Like my management team is so amazing. My agent's amazing. My parents are insane. Like the amount of like money they've lent us, and you know, like the amount of support and love they've shown us. And
yeah,
like, you know, when we come back to New Zealand, we stay at their place.
It's so important, man.
And all my friends back home in New Zealand have just been like so supportive and pushing me, and you know, like, you can do this, man, like you're crazy, and like all the stuff is so amazing, we support you. And yeah, I think it's incredible.
Well, that's beautiful, man. Before I wrap this up, is there anything else we haven't covered, anything you want to get out there?
Love my wife. I love coffee. I'm trying to be a barista.
Big shout out to coffee.
Yeah, big shout out to coffee. Big shout out to my boy Brandon, who is a DNZ. He's our videographer for all of our US shows and whatnot. He used to be a barista as well.
Oh, amazing.
And he's now at film school, I think. Yeah. And he got a coffee machine, and he came over and pretty much taught me how to pour. And I've been pouring, dude. Hashtag pour.
You've been pouring up.
Hashtag how good can you pour? I've seriously, like, you know, any chance I get to like steam some milk and pour it into a latte and make some latte art, it's like just as good as making a banger.
Yeah, 100%. You gotta talk to Kurt Flossradamus about that.
He's into
big,
it
big coffee guy.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, we gotta like have a whole DJ get together and just be like pouring. And
yeah, there's some other people, I'll think of it later, I'll send them to you. There's a couple people I know who are
definitely
super into that.
Oh, I love that.
So I'll end just by asking the same question I ask at the end of each episode.
Oh, I don't know this one.
Good.
I haven't heard what the last question
is. I'm glad. The simple question, you don't have to think about it too hard.
Yeah.
Kind of the first thing that pops into your head.
Yeah.
Just
bananas.
Looking... No, wrong.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Basically, just looking for a time in your life, a moment in your life when in a moment, music really deeply affected you. And that's meant to be a really broad question. And it doesn't have to be a significant moment, just kind of like the first thing that pops into your head.
Yeah. So I talked about this moment and before where I was at Nocturnal Wonderland.
Yeah.
And I played the main stage and it was sunset. And we paid for one shot of big fire, of one pyro hit of fire.
Oh, yeah. So the flames shoot off the stage.
Yeah. So big one. And, I had queued it up so that it was I played the second drop of Supernatural, and then it came down, and then I pretty much lowered the whole fader and I talked to the crowd, and there was about 10,000 kids there. And in my head right now, I'm thinking, man, how did I speak to 10,000 people so comfortably? I was like, hey, what's up, guys? I just want to say like, thank you so much for supporting my music. I'm just some random kid from New Zealand that somehow is on this gigantic stage, and like you guys are, you know, insane for supporting me, and I don't know how I'm here. And it was like this moment where I took and I'm like, music has brought me to this point, and pretty much I did this little like 30-second like message to the kids, and then I pressed play, and then we sang the Supernatural hook, and then we dropped into the first drop, and I was expecting, you know, that's when the fire was meant to happen, because I'm like, hey, we're going to pay for this fire to happen at this special moment. We're going to get it on film. It's going to be incredible. And it was hilarious because I was expecting this flame, and then I think the pyro guys were like, damn, man, this guy's like the man. And I feel like, you know, like maybe we give him a little bit more, you know, maybe we give him some extra. So instead of flames, I had like 6 firework shots just go bang, 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 bang. And it was incredible. And it flipped me out, because I was just like expecting just heat.
Right.
And all of it was just like bang. And there's still explosion. Like a video on my Instagram of it. And and you can hear the crowd scream so loud. And the reason why was because that was the first fireworks pyro shot of the whole festival.
Oh, there you go.
And you know, like if you're going to watch like a fireworks thing, show, the first one's like, whoa!
It's always the best.
And then in the middle, it's sort of like, oh, yep, I've seen this.
Still going.
And it's still going. And then the last one, they do like all of them at once. And everyone's just like, whoa, that was amazing. But I had the first firework pyro shot.
Right.
And that was just like insane. And then the pyro guy gave me, you know, not just flames, but like way better fireworks.
Yeah, they liked you, man.
And that was just like, this kid's doing all right.
Oh, man.
So
that's a beautiful moment.
So that was a really cool moment for me and my
cool.
team.
That's cool you're able to look back on, and even in the moment, to sort of just realize that's sort of like an I made it moment, right?
Yeah, definitely.
That's fantastic, man. I think Supernatural too. We didn't talk about it much, but that to me was such a game-changing song, like
definitely.
For you and Boombach. I mean, I'm sure it was game-changing for you guys, but even just as someone outside, just someone in the scene,
right.
I'm glad you guys made that song. I think it was really good for the scene. Like, you know, every once in a while, there are those game-changing songs that change the landscape and push people in different directions. And to me, that was one of them, man. And I'm glad you're still out here making them.
Yeah. And again, like when we were making that song, I didn't think that was going to be anything. I just I thought it was just going to be like another cool release that maybe, a million people would hear in the whole lifetime of that track. But
I think that's how all the good ones are made, man. Because if you had been sitting there being like, this is going to be the biggest song of blah, 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 it wouldn't have been the same song, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I love that, man. Well, a lot of knowledge in here. Thanks for doing this, man. I'm glad we finally connected.
I know. It's great.
It's been a while.
it's been a while. Definitely. I'm glad this is happening. And special shout out to just everyone.
Shout out to everyone.
Yeah, shout out everyone for listening to this. If you've listened the whole way through and you haven't skipped, and you're just stoked off this whole thing, tweet at me.
You have to tweet the banana emoji.
Yep, you have to tweet the banana emoji. Banana, banana.
There you go.
Banana, banana.
Cultural difference.
And I will recognize you as a special person. So well done. Congratulations.
All right, man. Thanks.
Later.
Peace.
Nice.
Right, that's the show. Shout out to Quicks. Great to talk to you, man. Love doing that one. For everybody out there listening, I hope you enjoyed that too. He's just a sweetheart. Make sure you keep up with him. Keep up with everything he's doing. There's a link in the description of this episode where you can go follow Quicks. Grab all the new music, the collabs with Alice in Wonderland, Adventure Club. All of that good shit is at that link. You can always hit me up to backtobackpod@gmail.com or on all social media. I'm at Willie Joy or at backtobackpod. That's it for this week. That was a fun one. I'm actually about to hop in the car tomorrow, drive out a little ways to meet up with some future guests on the show. I'm excited to tell you about that, but you're just going to have to wait to find out who's coming up. I hope you have a great week. I hope you take care of yourself, take care of the people around you. You guys are the best. I'll talk to you next Tuesday. For Back to Back, this is Willie Joy. Peace.